Writing is like riding a bike. It takes practice, and it's really hard to make a career out of. So if you want to make a living from your writing, you better learn how to do it only using one foot and while sitting on the handlebars. Here to find our way to the bottom of the page, welcome to The Writer's Block. I'm your host, Angel Rouse, and I'm joined today by Megan Sander. She's a writer who's done dramatic slice-of-life screenplays, as well as a published short story called The Open Window Project, available to buy on Amazon. It's 2 p.m. on the 6th of March here on kpcradio.com, and it's great to be here with you, Megan.
Thanks, Angel. It's good to be with you, too.
Awesome. So, first things first, what is the most intense writer's block you've had to deal with?
Okay, I thought a lot about this, because there are many possible answers. And then driving here, I remembered that when I was 16 and trying to write, like, the first complete thing I'd ever done, which is, like, a three-act play called Ashes, I remember a very strong, like, 2 years where I couldn't get it off the ground for a very, very specific part of it. And it lasted a lot longer than it should have been, because I think this is the reason I bump into writer's block so much, is because I see a part of it that I'm trying to pick up and I can't pick it up. It's just, it's stuck in this gutter and I can't lift it out, and it causes me to, like, instinctively lose hope about where it's going, and because of that I just walk away and I keep walking away and I never come back. But, and that lasted for, yeah, about 2 years in high school, because at the time I was still trying to, like, find out where my voice in writing was and if this is a project I should, like, continue with. And I think it was around, like, yeah, my junior year, where I was, like, struggling in theater and stuff, and I realized I needed some kind of leg to put me into the, you know, people's peripheral, and Ashes was kind of, like, always in my subconscious about, I don't know, it was kind of, like, a part of me at that point. I'd been working with it so long, and I remember one day just, like, figuring out that, like, this is what is going to put me into, you know, a serious position, not only in other people's line of vision, but for myself. And if I finish this, then I have this one thing in this area of my life that not a lot of other people had, because everyone in theater just kind of, like, stuck to their guns of what they knew, and that was just acting. And I finished it, and it was, mind you, it was the first draft. It was nothing I was proud of, nor am I still particularly proud of today, because I haven't really picked it to a area like, but, like, I showed it to my theater teacher, and I kind of, like, guilted him into producing it, and that was... And that was the first thing I had ever done. So I was thinking about that, and I was like, yeah, that's what I should talk about, because that was kind of the bridge from, like, is this what I should be doing? Am I ready for this? Have I picked, like, a really self-destructive path for myself? And I bridged from that to, like, Megan, shut up and just do what feels right to you. And that was it, and that's probably the worst it's ever been so far, which is good, because that was kind of, like, a very big stepping stone to where I am now in writing.
So difficult, but very formative.
Oh, yeah.
So was that when you started really writing creatively, or were you doing any writing before that?
What I was doing before was strictly for me, just, like, trying to get myself into an area where I knew what I wanted to do. And I remember in middle school a lot, I would carry, like, a bunch of different composition books around with me. And I was like, I'm going to write a book right now, and it's going to be about, like, aliens who are bred on Earth to, like, protect us from a force they knew were coming or something. It was called Harpids. And I just started, like, writing it right there in this composition book, and I got, like, 200 pages in. And it was just, like, that's what I was known for. I was just, like, always scribbling it, because I had a lot of, like, social anxiety issues. I couldn't talk to people. That was my escape. It was Harpids. Until eventually I looked at it and I was like, wait, where is this going? What's happening? What am I? Because I didn't plan it out. So yeah, like, I knew I liked it. I knew it was a good escape for me. I knew it was, like, a comfortable position for me to be in since, like, elementary school. And so I would just kind of, like, do little things here and there. But it wasn't until Ashes where I started doing stuff kind of, like, for other people. I started writing it for audiences instead of, like, just what does Megan want to write about today? Which is a part of it, yeah, but you also got to consider who's going to be taking it in. Mm-hmm.
So, Harpids, is that something that you've thought about going back to and expanding on, or is that going to stay in middle school, that story?
Probably middle school. It's...
What was the story about?
Okay, it starts off with... And mind you, this was seventh grade, so don't judge me too harshly, but okay.
No judgment here. I'm just listening.
Okay. On a planet called, I think it was like Possil Gaza or something, there's been like this attack from this other alien race that just wants to dominate everything. And that's where they started. They annihilate everything except this one guy survives. And he was engineering this thing called Harpids. And it's where you take this... God, I don't know what it was, some kind of like energy source, and you bring it to Earth and you put it in a child. And then that child grows up with this like special force surrounding them, and they have to try and figure out like why they're different than anyone, because they weren't giving any guidance, they were just babies when it happened. And then they like find each other, and then I think I put like a book somewhere on the planet because they're all like spread out everywhere. I don't know how they found each other. And then they had to figure out how to defend the Earth they were born and raised on from this oncoming force. And that's Harpids. And that's what I just kind of started shoving into a book when I was like 14, until I realized that I had no guidance whatsoever. And that's why since then I've become a lot more like planned out with what I'm about to start. Because that was just a mess and I didn't know where I was going. So probably that's probably going to stay in middle school. I don't know how I'm going to pick that up again if I ever do.
You know, it's funny because in middle school, I had a kind of similar experience. Mm-hmm. I never thought about writing a book, but I had a bunch of composition notebooks that I would just journal in.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting looking back at that period of your life and seeing how you write, how you formed ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, do you feel like reading that older writing that you can see the older Megan and stuff that Megan thought was cool back when she was 14 years old?
Definitely.
Like, do you see a lot of that when you're reading
them? Oh, yeah, because I remember I kept them on my desk one day, and there's this every couple of months I would just kind of like see it and go like, oh, yeah, that, and just start reading everything. And you can really see how, like, Fetus Megan shoved a bunch of her day's events into this, like... If there is a scene that's like particularly violent and it does not need to be like, oh, Megan had a bad day that day. And I remember doing that. I remember coming home really sad for, you know, different things you do when you're a child, and you just kind of like sit down and you're like, all right, I'm going to fix this. And you just make a scene where everyone's happy and getting along with each other, and stuff that doesn't need to be uplifting is very uplifting, because it's like, it's kind of like what you do to save yourself when you're in that mood. If you're angry, you just like make it. You just kind of project it from yourself. And I think I did that a lot more when I was a kid, because I didn't really have that barrier saying, okay, wait, Megan, calm down. Should this be going in here? Is this appropriate? And when I was a kid, I was just like, no, I'm going to fix this. This is what I have to do to protect this day, you know?
Mm-hmm. So when you're reading your writing, you know, not just when you were a kid, but mm-hmm. now when you're writing, well, let me step back a second.
Okay.
When you're reading, like, you're writing older pieces of writing, like, mm-hmm. what have you learned about your practice for writing, or even about yourself, like, while writing Harpids, while writing Ashes, and so on?
So, like, the more recent stuff that I've been doing?
Well, particularly with that older stuff, when you're rereading it, mm-hmm. like, what do you feel like you learned about your practice writing while you were doing those?
Definitely that I was... Honestly, probably that I was trying to sound more like a writer than I actually was. And also, like, how much of myself I put into it. Because I'll have a play with, like, seven different characters, but they'll all say the things that I normally say and all, you know, kind of act the same way I kind of do, but in their own specific versions. And while it's fine to put yourself into your writing, it's a problem if you have seven Megan Sanders in one thing. Because I was so fixated on this idea that, like, okay, well, everyone, pretty much every Stephen King book, like, the main character lives in Maine and is a writer, and he's using that. Like, why can't I project myself into this? It's healthy for me, right? And I notice a lot of that in my old writing. Because, like, I'm trying to do that, like, while... Yeah, I'm just trying so hard to make it a projection of myself that becomes, like, too much like Megan Sander. And that's something I kind of still need to work on today. Just, like, deriving each character to its own thing. Because that's all I knew how to do, was just do it to help myself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I'm doing it for audiences, and it's different now.
Right. So it sounds like when you were starting to write that you were interested in, like, novelistic writing, like saying, I'm going to write a book when you're 14 years old.
Yeah.
And then later playwriting. And then I know right now you're more into screenwriting.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you say that your thought process differs across those three, like when you're sitting down to write for a novel, for a play, for a movie?
Honestly, because I only did playwriting in high school. Like, I wanted to be a screenwriter when I was in high school. I knew that. I knew that I knew nothing about it. And I also knew that I was in a theater class, so playwriting is what I should be focusing on then. And that's why I started doing that. And ever since I started, like, seriously getting into screenwriting and learning about screenwriting, it's definitely a much different thought process, because now there's more stuff I can do with screenwriting versus play. You feel like there's a lot more barriers than there should be there, and that restricts me a lot. But with screenwriting, it's just, I kind of, like, influence myself to be more creative about my options, about where I could go. And same with novel writing. Again, you heard it was a story about aliens coming to Earth and destroying everything. You definitely have a lot more freedom in that, and you try to, like, convince yourself to be more expressive with what you can do versus playwriting, where you kind of, like, learn to set up barriers, and now I'm just learning to take those barriers down.
Mm-hmm. So, for your writing, mm-hmm. which, you know, primarily screenwriting, novelistic writing right now, who are big professional inspirations that you look up to? Like, someone writing books or writing movies right now that you really appreciate their work?
Honestly, ever since I watched Adaptation...
Oh, I love Adaptation. Charlie Kaufman is my favorite writer in Hollywood right
He's
now.
He's become a big one. He's just...
Yeah.
Like I said before, you have to learn to, like, take down barriers for what you can and cannot do and how creative you can be. And he's like, the perfect representation of that.
Yeah. Like, there's this Japanese game director, Yoko mm-hmm. Taro, who he makes really interesting video games.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this whole talk one time about his process for writing, and he put most video games in this bubble of what's being done right now.
Okay.
And said that he wants to try and make stories outside of that bubble. Like, what is it that's possible that could be done? And I feel like Charlie Kaufman really exists outside of that bubble
mm-hmm.
with how crazy, how creative, how inventive his stories are.
Mm-hmm.
But those are definitely the kind of things that I would want to be writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because they feel like important stories.
Yeah.
Really good emotional truth at the bottom of them.
Yeah. It's all definitely coming from his specific mindset, which is what I said before about, like, making a projection of yourself, not going too far. Which is funny because Adaptation is, like, it's like, it's him. He's just talking about him and the stuff he's thinking about and that. But he makes it work.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get to that. Where you can, like, make it where it's, like, projection of yourself and you're, like, the way your specific mind works. Because he has a very specific writing style. It's really weird. But making it work for audiences. And that's definitely something I think a lot whenever I look at his stuff.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading an interview with Charlie Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this line that the person conducting the interview wrote that I really liked, which was, like, writing about Charlie Kaufman is like taking a photo of Picasso. Like, what's the point when mm-hmm. in his art he already bears himself out there completely,
yeah.
which is really interesting. I would definitely like to get to a point like that where, you know, I'm able to
get away with it.
Write on that level.
Yeah, make it work.
And who are big personal inspirations in your life, people that you know personally that really make you want to succeed?
As a writer or succeed in general?
Succeed in general or specifically as a writer.
That's a weird question to ask. No, it's hard to answer because I kind of grew up in this own, like, corner of what I wanted to do. Like, the reason I did it was because I knew it's something I liked and I wanted to do it despite what everyone else was doing. I liked it because it was different. So personal inspirations, it's hard. Growing up, like, when you start getting into, like, you know, start, like, taking courses that relate to what you want to do and being around people who specifically want to do that versus regular school where it's just you're all trying to figure out what you want to do, you bump into a lot of people that have taken your craft and, like, pushed it to a new original level. And you look at that more than you think you would in terms of, like, is that something I should try, if that's working for them. So there's some I've picked up, like instinctively along the way. When it comes to, like, succeeding in general, I don't know. That's just kind of been hard writing to me.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm thankful for that. But honestly, it's just... yeah, just, like, different voices I picked up along the way. There hasn't been, like, I don't think there's been, like, one specific person in my life where I'm like, that, I'm going to do everything the way you're doing it because it's working. It's just like, how can I derive from that but still make it work for myself? But I still love you, Mom. Yeah, it's just kind of like stuff I instantly try to like nitpick about, should I be doing what you're doing? Should I be taken to another level? But yeah, it's just like different voices here and there that I like tune into and don't.
Right, I understand. So, like, and I know that you've been writing with your partner, Sam, that you both worked together on the Open Window project.
Yeah, which was a new experience.
Yeah, that writing collaboratively.
I've never done that before, and it was weird. And it was, because whenever I wrote, it was, the reason I liked it is because I can just, like, shut myself in my room and do it by myself and do my own process. And it was kind of a hard thing to go into because before I started writing Open Window Project with Sam, I had, like, this very specific, somewhat specific view of, like, where I wanted it to go. And I'd try, like, pitching that to Sam, and he'd be like, okay, but what if we did this? And my brain would instantly be like, but what if we didn't do it like that? And that's what I needed to learn to push aside with co-writing. Because I had, like, an instinctively hard time listening to his creative decisions, which is terrible, definitely. But it just sucks when you're trying to, like, respect your vision and then listen to someone else. And I definitely feel like I was a bit of a dictator in that situation. And Sam, if you're listening to this, I love you and you're great for dealing with that. But it's definitely, I think I should do more of that so I can learn to, like, you know, make a balance of what you both want, because he definitely like helped a lot. He gave a lot of good input. It's just what I need. I just needed to swallow my own pride and listen to him more. So yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, that I know that for sure, that that's a very important skill to learn, because mm-hmm. you know, there's this saying that every movie is written three times. Like, one, it's written on paper, two, it's shot, three, it's edited.
Yeah, I've heard.
So you know, there's so many levels of interpretation with screenwriting, especially.
Yeah.
Like, you know, not to mention, you know, playwriting also, where there's directors, actors.
And they can take it in a completely different way you've never thought of before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which can be really difficult for a writer to let go of that.
And I'm like subconsciously setting myself up for the fact that if everything goes according to plan and the stars are aligned and I do make a voice for myself in the industry, I gotta get used to selling my baby to people over and over and over again. Because everyone tells me that. Every screenwriter had has been like, all right, when you do this, they're going to have lawyers, and it's going to be theirs. And you have to let that happen. And they're going to take it in whatever way they want to. And you might hate it, but you need to pay rent. And I'm just, like, subconsciously getting myself ready for that when it happens. Because I know it's going to be fun.
I really like how you put that, selling your baby. Like, lawyers, yeah. Walls, and everything up.
Yeah.
So the Open Window Project, I was going to ask, the mm-hmm. story is about a group of young filmmakers working on a documentary about America's lack of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
So where did that story come from? Was that something that you were thinking of? Was that something that came up in a conversation between you and Sam?
Honestly, how I came up with that idea for the story is I used to jog a lot at night, and every day I jogged by this one house that was like, its windows were made like very clear, the downstairs and the upstairs, where you can see like right into them and see everything they're doing. And for some reason, I was just jogging by that, and I just stopped jogging. I started walking really slowly by it, and I was like, what if I just watch someone get stabbed in the neck right now through that window while I'm watching this? And then I started thinking more about that. And when I think of ideas for anything, I have a very specific process where I don't do anything. I just kind of like sit with it for like a couple of months and just think about it and think about that. And I started wondering, like, what if someone wanted me to watch that person get stabbed in the neck and to see how I would react? And then I started thinking about that more and more and more. And then I was like, wait, what if someone made like a video about that? Like, what if we're trying to see the natural reactions of how people respond to murder? Because I thought about that and I was like, I'd probably run away. I'd probably go and get help or something. But like, what if someone else ran inside? What if someone fought that person? Just like starting to think about, like, the different like human reactions that people have. And it was Sam's idea to have the reason those kids are doing that project, staging murders in front of people and to see how they would react, is because they're trying to, like, subconsciously absolve something they've done before. And in this case, it was a hit and run, which they ran away from. And they're trying to, like, subconsciously absolve their guilt by putting up a mirror to us that they have no right putting up and saying, like, well, how would everyone else do it? And then it takes a weird turn, and then, like, well, I'm not going to go into that in case people are looking for story ideas. But yeah, it just came from a really weird spot.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know the story for how you guys conceptualized that.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that you're editing it right now to make it a longer story.
Kind of. Well, because I have the short script kind of right now. It's still being worked on, but I'm trying to make that... it's hard because I'm taking an advanced grade writing class right now, and our main thing is we have to, over the course of 16 weeks, write a full-length screenplay. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. I'll take open window, I'll use what I learned in that class, and make it a feature. So that's what I'm slowly working on right now. But while I'm trying to edit it for a short version, because me and Sam were talking about making it into, like, a video, which I've never done before, and he has. So it's kind of like a weird position I put myself in, because I'm trying to make it shorter and longer at the same time. And it's not terrible, because it's forcing me to think about, like, what are the important moments I need to focus on? What should I, you know, reel back and save for the other things? It's... I'm working on that story a lot more than I should be, because I'm taking it like a bunch of really weird directions, which is great because it's making me think about it more, but it's exhausting, honestly.
Yeah, that's really good. That sounds like good practice.
Mm.
So, like, another question I had is, you're still working on the story despite it being published already. And, you know, most people would assume that once a work is out in the world, that it's done.
Mm-mm.
So what do you think about that?
Mm-mm.
And what is it that's calling you back to this story?
Angel, it's so painful because I know in my heart I published a rough draft. We finished that, and for some reason, I guess there weren't a lot of contestants. We were finalists, and they're like, all right, so here's, like, a publishing package if you want to. It's with Dizimo if you want to take that up with that. And I was like, yes, let's do it. This is amazing. I'm famous. Let's get this out there. And Sam's like, seems like you don't know. It's like, no, we're doing it. This is fantastic. I'm so excited. And then we published it, and then it's not ready. It sucks. And I'm okay with it being forgotten about, because it was a rough draft. Like, it's not even, we published, like, a Celtex version, and there aren't, like, periods where they're supposed to be, and it's just, like, there's just so many, like, formatting mistakes, and the story was not where I wanted it to be yet, and I hate looking back and reading it. And now Sam's excited, because he's like, oh, yeah, people can buy it now, this is great, let's get it out there. And I'm like, Sam, no, stop, it's not, we have to, it's so difficult. So, and even if I loved it when I finished it, even if I get it right now to a point where I love it and I get it out there, 15 years from now, I'm still going to be like, oh, should he have said that? Does that sound right? Should this have happened instead? Was that natural? Was that right? Is the pacing weird? I don't think a story is ever done being written. And that's what's so exhausting about this path that I've chosen for myself. I'm constantly thinking about different things I've finished or I'm still working on. And it's kind of, it follows you. And that's what's so stressful about it.
Mm-hmm. So... I have one more question.
Okay.
Where do you want to be further along in your career?
I've always loved the idea of just having a little house to myself, so somewhere in, like, Santa Monica or something, and just, like, having a room designated for this one thing that I do, where I just sit down and I just write, and I have, like, different notes written all over the walls, and there's just, like, kids screaming, running around my house. And I'm just like, that's where I live. That's my house. And I never leave it because I never need to. I just write all day and look after my offspring and then don't worry about anything else and just send it off to the world. And that sounds like heaven to me. Just living in my own little bubble and just making stories for people.
That's really beautiful. So you've been listening to The Writer's Block with guest Megan Sander. You can find her short story, The Open Window Project, on Amazon. Make sure to pick it up now. It could be a collector's item in 15 years when she's big and famous. And tune in next week on kpcradio.com, where we'll be talking to a working screenwriter. I'm Angel Arouse, and until next time, have a great day.